take the cannon out of a Spitfire, because you've got this panel to take off. Just ordinary screw, a screwdriver, half a twist, and you go right round, take it out, and because you've got to disconnect all the pipes. The guns were fired by air, compressed air. The pilot had got a container. You'd got all those to undo. And you put your hand under the back block, hand under the main body. The main body was probably only about this length, something like that. The rest was all barrel. You'd got to move it backwards, and your mate at the front end, he was pushing, helping to push it through. And then you'd got the weight. Once you'd got it off the slide, you'd got all the weight on your knees, on your hands, and you were really struggling not to slide off the main plane. And you lifted it out of the hole, and then your mate would run round and give you a bit of a hand with it. But it was very heavy to put in.
And this is out of a Spitfire, isn't it?
Pardon?
It's out of the good.
That's
out of
a Spitfire. Yeah. You were really confined. You know, the space was ever so tight. I mean, you can imagine, because I mean the wing was only sort of that deep at the front end, and it tapered off. We had some wonderful experience then. Of course, to get at the 303s, to put the ammunition to the 303s, you were underneath with probably 50 pounds of ammo. You weren't standing up, you weren't sitting down, you were crouching. There again, all weight on the knees, with a panel of a box of ammo. You'd got to clip it in one end, and then the other end was easy, just pushed up onto a spring-loaded catch. But it was a pleasure to work on the aircraft, really. Rather, I wouldn't have been without it, you know. Yeah, I mean, to be able to say now, I worked on the Spitfire, it's absolutely superb. Yeah, marvellous.
Have you ever caught any air raids or anything like that?
Oh yes, every day. Oh, five or six, seven, eight air raids a day. And the Germans would put one on. They'd come down really low with the Stukas and the 88s. And then they'd beetle off. And then the Italians would come, and they only sent five aircraft at a time, and it was all high level bombing, and they used to go right down the runway and make the runway unserviceable. And of course the ground was hard, it's all rock there, and any unexploded bombs would just stick out of the ground, probably about this much of tail fin sticking out.
2 or 3 feet, so.
Yeah, and we were short of Royal Engineers, and we had to go and blow our own bombs up.
But you had to do that yourself?
We had to do that ourselves. We'd push all the aircraft away from the immediate vicinity and put wet and dry gun cotton round the bomb, just blow it up in situ. We didn't bother pulling it out, it was too hard. We hadn't got the equipment anyway. And just blow them up on the spot. If the engineers were available, they would bring their equipment and pull them out of the ground. But we didn't even bother defusing them. Just used to go up to them, put the tackle around, and lay the wire out and blow them up.
On one of them.
Twists.
Angle twisting.
Yeah. And on to Carley, there was a building. And the higher ups, they were positive that the Germans were using it as a site. You know, put the sights on that, and they knew the bombs would go in the right place. So the commanding officer came into the armory. He says, "I want to get rid of that building. Any ideas?" And our sergeant, flight sergeant, he was a Pole, and he says, "Can we have a bomb, sir?" So I says, "What sort?" He says, "Well, if we put a bomb in there, put an hour's delay on it, and everybody walk away, and then let it take its course." So So he says, good idea. And he sent straight away to the, because we'd no bombs on that station, and they sent to Lucca, where you will land, and I think it was a 250 pounder. And we stuck it in the building, fused it, and walked away from it. And that was it. No, the end of the building. Oh, but the air raids, they were very, very frequent. And I mean, they used to drop a lot of bombs. And the only cover we'd got, of course, all the aircraft, the Spitfires, they built what they called pens. They were like structures built of empty petrol cans. We used to have the petrol come in 4 gallon cans, something like that. They got these cans, filled them with rocks and all rubble, and built pans. They'd put them in, build them in pairs, one like that, just to take two aircraft. And we used to build a slit trench for our own protection at the back of the pen, but you couldn't go down any further than that. It was solid rock, but that was enough. You got stretched out in those.
About 2 or 3 feet.
And the blast would just go over you. Oh no, not 2 or 3 feet.
Oh.
You were lucky to get 18 inches.
Yes.
But that was enough. You'd get your body in below the ground level and the blast would go over you. I think the nearest I came to a bomb would probably be about 20 feet, 25 feet. This was on Califrana. The fighter station I was talking about was Tacali. But on Califrana, the siren had gone. We came out of the turret section, and there was a gun post on the, you know, where we used to pull the aircraft up out of the water. And I popped in there, and that bomb, it couldn't have been more than 25 feet away. Because it actually hit a building, a small building, and we found later, when everything had cleared off, there was Air Force shoes in it. And of course we weren't allowed shoes, and I came away with a pair of shoes, and I carried them right through the rest of my Air Force service, and nobody queried it. Weren't supposed to have them. That, of course, was looting. Plain and simple. You'd do anything. Tail end of 40, early 41, and we both volunteered for the Air Force. And within days, I had a letter saying, come in, report to RAF Padgate, and you'll be attested. And you'll be sent back home. Tell your factory people that you'll be off for 3 days. But they never sent me back home. I think at the time they were short of armourers, and they wanted to get as many trained as they could. So I went away, you know, to Padgate, expecting to come back home and go back to work, but never happened. Not till 5.5 years later.
No.
Yeah.
What about the convoys at Gibraltar? You were mentioning them to me earlier. When I saw you before.
Yeah. Well, I didn't travel on any merchant ship or troop ship. I went out with the Navy. Went out on HMS Kenya. A cruiser. I think there was about... There'd be about 100 Air Force on board.
What date was this? Do you remember?
Pardon?
Can you remember what date this was?
That we went out?
Yeah.
Yes. Late August, 1941. The date is on there when we landed. I think it was early September. So it would be in the last 2 weeks of August, 1941. And... as I say, I don't know whether I told you, down at the surgery, we'd got an officer with us. I think there was about 15 armourers, and he volunteered us for gun crew duty. So I found myself strapped into what the Navy called an Oerlikon. That was their 20mm. It had got shoulder rest. You put your shoulders in and then you were strapped into it. And to get the movement, you just walked around and lifted your shoulders if you wanted to elevate or depress the guns. They were all magazine fed, so you'd got to have a mate with you. As you emptied one magazine, he'd pop another one on. And by the way, when I first started on Spitfires, the cannons were magazine fed, so that meant you'd got a bulge on the wing. But shortly after I started at Carley, they brought some new Spitfires out to us, and these were belt fed. So you've got a little gadget on top of the cannon, only probably like that, and that was spring loaded. The ammunition that would be in a tank on the side, and this machine used to pull it in as one cartridge was pulled out of the belt. Another one, the belt would pop up ready for another one to be pulled out, which improved it. It meant that the Spitfire could carry more ammunition to each gun. But even so, we'd only got 35, 40 rounds per gun. Wasn't a lot.
That's the 20mm cannon, is it?
Yeah. If the pilot kept his finger on the button too long, he'd use all his ammo up. So, but there again, the Brownings were only 303. They ought to have been 0.5. The original Spitfires, of course, had got 8 of those. But if he'd have had 8.5s, there'd have been nothing to have touched it. They wouldn't have needed to have put cannons on. Mind you, the cannons did all right, but... I must tell you this. Our Spitfires had got 4 cannons on. 4 cannons and 4 Brownings. You know, 303s. But to let the Spitfire catch the ME-109G, we had to take 2 cannons out. Give him that extra 10 miles an hour. I lost a lot of firepower. And another thing that we had to do was to harmonise the guns so that everything met at either 200 or 250 yards, depended how the pilot liked it. We could adjust the guns so that all the ammunition met at one certain point. It was a good system. We'd got a diagram which used to put up at 25 yards and sight all the guns onto them. We had a special gadget which pushed down the barrel. It was like a periscope. You sighted down there, and you got your mate in the back, altering all the up and down movement, side to side movement, until you got onto the spots. And you knew, even though we were doing it at 25 yards, everything would meet at. Some pilots liked it at 200 yards, some liked it at 250. But quite a good thing.
Did you get on well with pilots? Did you
get yes. One of my pilots was the Duke of Hamilton, a Scots. I was on a Scots squadron. You'll say, why were you on a Scottish squadron? But in the Air Force, you could be posted as one man. If one station decided they were short of armourers, say they were short of 2 armourers, they would contact records and find out if a station had got two surplus bods, and they would be posted from there, from A to B. So that's why I came to be on a Scottish squadron. They were short of, at this particular time, they were short of six, and there were six of us transferred from Califrana to Tecale. City of Edinburgh, 603. Yeah, it's a good squadron.
Did they lose many pilots while you were there?
A lot, yeah. But actually we'd got a surplus of pilots because we lost such a lot of aircraft on the ground. We had a delivery one particular day of 50 aircraft, 50 Spitfires, a lot of Spits. We thought we were well away, and the Jerry caught us with a pants down. I think five or six of them flew again, all the rest were destroyed on the ground. Terrible, wasn't it? At £5,000 each. And they were all dumped into a quarry. Any spares that were usable, they were taken off. But when old Jerry had finished, he made a good job of them.
Is that the ones that were delivered from an aircraft carrier?
Yes. I say yes. Yes, they were. Very few were sent in crates, you know, fuselage and main planes separate, but what they did, they flew them to Gibraltar, put them onto an aircraft carrier, and then took them halfway through the Med, and then flew the rest of the way. But none of the pilots had had any work on aircraft carriers. It was just a hit and miss. Terrible, really. And they're only young lads. I mean, I'd just had my 20th birthday when I arrived there. But these pilots were about the same age, in the 20s, 21, 22. But that was a bad day for us when we lost all those. We were terribly short of everything. As I told you in the surgery there, even the anti-aircraft guns were rationed with shells, which is crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
We'd just been that long without supplies. I mean, we were getting no boats through. Even the submarines were bringing us aviation fuel. And I mean, they were restricted for how much they could carry. And of course, the authorities took the Navy away from us for a period, bung them into Alexandria, just to keep them safe. There was so much risk of losing them in the harbour. And I'm going to tell you this, I mean, I am a religious person, but not over the top. But there, we all got together and we prayed. Roman Catholics, Methodists, Church of England, all in, and we came away. I believe that. That was in tail end of 1942. We were struggling. On to Carly, we were under canvas at night.
Is this the float plane base or the...
This was the fighter drone.
Fighter
drone. Tecale was the fighter drone. Califrana was the seaplane base. Oh, we'd got rescue launches there, high-speed rescue launches for picking pilots. So. But on Tecale, we were under canvas. Oh, I don't know how far it was. Probably 20 miles away from the airfield at night, and we were under canvas, and there was no facilities for cooking, so we used to come away. There was a bus laid on one of the Maltese buses, which had been taken over by the airport. We had to be down on the airfield for dawn, so we had to leave the campsite, no breakfast, and probably mid-morning they'd bring us a bit of something round, and it was a bit of something. Salvation Army were there with the cups of tea. They were very faithful to us. And we might get a dinner midday if we were lucky. We were really underfed. And we were on the airfield till it went dark. That was from dawn till dusk. And there the days are very long. You know, in middle of summer. So we were really shattered. And each armourer had got two aircraft to look after. Except when, you know, you'd probably call on your mate if there was something that two men had got to do. But there was a team of men on each two sets of pens. There'd be a rigger for the fuselage and wings, flight mechanic for the engine, armourer, and there'd be a wireless bloke. He'd probably have five or six aircraft. He never had a deal to do. An electrician, and a bloke out of the photographic section for the camera. Each aircraft had a camera.
This is a gun camera, is it?
A gun camera, yeah. And we had a laugh once, because the rigger, when we'd finished loading the 303s, he would come round and put a patch on the gun port, and this particular time he put a patch over the camera, didn't he? So the aircraft went up and they couldn't take any pictures. Don't forget that.
How often were the planes taken off and landed?
Well, they'd probably be taken off 10, 15 times a day. And we had to, once they'd landed, we had to all get stuck in and do our job to get them ready for flying. They used to give us about 20 minutes to get them flying again after they'd come down. They'd got to be refueled. Of course, the mechanic, he'd no time to do anything. Just make sure all the buttons were fastened and see to the fuel being put on board. And we'd actually got the Army and the Navy helping us with our jobs, you know, reloading and messing about with the guns. In fact, there's some, I don't know, I've got a book upstairs, and it shows Navy blokes working on the Spitfires. Because their armourers were trained same as us on Spitfire. They'd got a C version of the Spitfire, so they knew all about it. And the army lads, they soon picked up what they'd got to do. You know, general dog's bodies. You know, any lifting or anything like that, they would be there just to get the aircraft back in the air again. Besides, the pilots used to be like to be up there, they were safer. They reckon, I don't know how we went on with it down on the ground. We had a bloke live local, and he was on one of the aircraft carriers, the Eagle. She was sunk on one of the last convoys, but the main convoy that got through, there were 17 merchantmen left this country, and there was only 5 arrived. All the rest were sunk. So you can see the way the Germans, they wanted to knock Malta out. What was the big German general in Africa?
Rommel.
He wanted the island taken. because we were a real thorn in his side, because we'd got Swordfish and the Navy before they took the Navy away, and we were sinking his suppliers. So he wanted the island taken over, but Hitler wouldn't let him, apparently. Now that's the story we were told. So it must have been an important place